This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 2nd of August, 2022, and certainly geopolitical tensions are the key thing to watch here as Pelosi looks like she will be landing in Taipei this evening. I suppose that's local time for a meeting with the Taiwanese president tomorrow. We've seen all kinds of threats from the Chinese side on what this would entail, and there will be some kind of consequences. The question, what those consequences will be. We'll get more to that, but for now, I think it's more interesting to look at yesterday's session where we saw a really key technical challenge. This NASDAQ 100 level, this 13,000 area was challenged and it failed on the first attempt. There was a further drop in U.S. Treasury yields. That has generally been market supportive, but not so yesterday where we saw a further sharp drop in yields, but the equity market rolling over. I wonder if some of this is on perhaps concerns about a slowing economy. That would be certainly a change of pace. But Peter, we have a very interesting sort of development here in the theme baskets because cue geopolitical tensions. And what was the best performing basket yesterday? That was the defense basket with that 2.1% performance on a day that was pretty sideways to slightly weak on the session there. So to take us through what you're seeing in this market and what you're looking for next.
Yeah, so there was a boost to some of the growth pockets as well because of the declining yields we had yesterday. So as I said to you before we went on the podcast, yesterday's session was a little bit odd because you had those yields still coming down, but equities also were coming down. That was a little bit at odds with what we have seen. But yes, you're correct. The defense basket, which is still the best performing basket year to date, had a good performance yesterday. And it's all eyes on Taiwan. And I personally got rid of my CNY bonds ETF in my personal asset allocation yesterday. I've been thinking about it for 3 months. I gave myself a little bit of space to think this whole through. And you can argue that it's large U.S. asset management firms are running around the world selling CNY bonds because they have very low correlation to other asset classes, very smooth return profile. And you can argue, so why leave something that good on the table? And for me, it's just this whole Taiwan. I mean, my thought process began with the invasion in Ukraine, Russia's invasion, and the way assets were freezed. I think that, I mean, I don't know what the future looks like, but this whole Taiwan thing could actually, I think will increase the disengagement or the divergence between the US and China, and it could have consequences on liquidity. And I'll actually show on slide 5 because the ETF I was using in my asset allocation is the iShares China CNY bond usage ETF, and it had $13.5 billion in fund assets by late January. But look, after the war in Ukraine, foreign investors are really cutting back on their exposure. You have a historically strong Chinese currency, and they have a very weak economy. So given how export oriented they are, I think there's a currency risk to the bonds. That's one thing. But the second risk, of course, is any escalation over Taiwan. I think that's really the key one here. So I think a lot of investors are rethinking their exposure to emerging markets in general, but most specifically China, after what happened in Ukraine and this Taiwan issue.
Yeah, and I'm going to rewind a little bit. I want to, of course, deepen our points on Taiwan, but on slide 3, just looking at what has supported this equity market rally, and we can see the NASDAQ 100 there is in blue, and I put an inversion of the U.S. 30-year yield in black, and you can see the very tight correlation between yields falling and basically bond prices going up, and the underlying equity market also going up. There's been a huge relief rally on the reduced pressure from a yield perspective. And I wonder if maybe yesterday, it's too early to say, could provide some kind of pivot here, in terms of the mentality. If the mentality starts to shift away from hooray for financial conditions easing and less pressure from yields to, oh my goodness, what is the nature of this incoming recession going to be? One or the other, I think is that you have a hard time finding further strong upside path for equities. You have to have the softest of landings for the market to avoid the impact on earnings, et cetera, if you're to see yields sort of continue to be moderated and not seeing a threat to the forward profit outlook. But let's revert back to the geopolitical tensions. It's really key, and there's a couple of other moving parts here we really need to consider. You mentioned CNY, and I think one of the most interesting things going on in the entire global economy is this China mortgage strike situation, which seems to be spreading and spreading fast. What does that mean for Chinese banks? What does that mean for government policy in terms of bailing out the banks? And what does that mean for the mentality of the sort of wealthy asset class that that owns a lot of this property and has been, you know, generated tremendous wealth off of this largest of markets globally in this whole asset class? I think it's a very fascinating situation, and not to mention the whole, all the commodity inputs into this tremendous, you know, what has been a tremendous consumer of commodities, everything from copper to cement to iron ore in the form of rebar, et cetera.
What happened in Japan, John? I think that's the, we talked about it yesterday, right? I mean, they had the same real estate boom, crazy boom for 3 decades, just like China. And what happened, obviously, from social issues or social tension perspective, they bailed out the banking sector, but the Japanese banks became zombie banks. And you know, you can't rule out that could become the case in China as well.
However, in the Japanese case, you didn't necessarily see people bailed out of the mortgages. And here there's this interesting behavior difference. And you saw some of these mortgages were just such spectacularly crazy multiples of people's incomes, people scraping together their entire family savings and borrowing to the hilt. And now they're just reneging on all that debt. So very interesting to see how, and of course, the nature of the CCP and its attitude towards social stability rather than capitalism, I think, is one of the angles here as well. It's just a fascinating thing to watch. And you can see the banks. I put one in there on slide 4, showing we're at new local lows here since back into 2020, basically back below pre-pandemic breakout levels. And then, of course, Pelosi is visiting Taiwan. There's been all kinds of, you know, various wing nuts like this Hu Xijin, I think his name is, former People's Daily editor, talking about not allowing Pelosi's plane to land. I sincerely doubt we're into that kind of military response, but there could be other flavors of a military response that are more sort of electronic warfare related. Who knows? Trade related, diplomatic related. This is going to trigger a tremendous escalation in tensions this visit. Pelosi has long been a critic of the policy towards Taiwan and is very interested in keeping a closer relationship with Taiwan. So we have to watch and beware of the potential implications, and they could be worse than I'm assuming here. But this is a very significant event geopolitically and in that relationship. Yeah, go ahead.
And John, we have to mention as well that yesterday the U.S. Congress passed a historic bill, a federal program to boost domestic chip making in the U.S. It's $52 billion, and there are other constraints that are made. So that means that if you take federal grants, which of course you will, because it's almost free money, from this program, you are not allowed to expand capacity in China on semiconductors with less than 28 nanometers. And for those that are not really aware of that game, if you, I mean, 28 nanometers is pretty, it's a...
I think we're down to what, 7 now is the...
Yeah, exactly. So the most advanced one is 10 and 7. This is a huge growth constraint, of course, for TSMC, so the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, and Intel. Both companies are really enjoying growth and trying to push into the Chinese market. So you can just really see the US now muscling in here. And it's, of course, also a way to constrain Chinese military, because as we have seen in Russia, cutting access to semiconductors and other key components has really derailed military production in Russia, because they have been relying on Western components. So it's there's so many moving parts in this. I just wanted to put in there because it's of course impacts the semiconductor industry.
Yeah, and the other, and actually speaking to where we've rallied to in some key markets, one of those being Tesla, which has been one of the most traded stocks, obviously. One of the reasons this received such a tremendous pump is not just from interest rates, but it's also and financial conditions more broadly, but also specifically this bill, a sort of a reduced version of the Build Back Better bill that Biden was pushing previously, and looks like it's going to go through in some form. It includes a $7,500 per vehicle tax credit for buying an EV. So that support to that sector, obviously seeing a Tesla pickup if this goes through, that's a tremendous support. Although they've raised their prices, I think, more than that recently anyway. Still, it would be seen, obviously, as a support for the entire EV sector. Let's switch to FX a little bit, because we have plenty going on in FX, and especially in the Japanese yen, with dollar yen falling further. Still, we had the ISM manufacturing release yesterday. The 52.8 at the headline was slightly better than expected, and barely lower from the 53.0 in June. So, you know, still ticking along in moderate expansion the whole sector, but the focus was on weak new orders at 48.0. That's a drop and suggests new orders are actually in contraction. That's a forward-leaning indicator suggesting we could be in contraction in that sector. And then as well, I think generating a really a lot of headlines here and raising eyebrows was the 60 in the ISM prices paid. That was the lowest since August of 2020 and suggests that pressures on further price rises for their inputs is falling fast. I think the more inflationary risks, however, are on the services side and the wages side of the economy. So I'm not sure we should put too much in that just now. I want to see the ISM services later this week and the earnings on Friday for the July jobs report. I think both of those are interesting. All right. So the Japanese yen, though, really enjoying that further tick down in yields, maybe some geopolitical tensions, seeing the Japanese yen a bit higher here. And as well, a big drop in crude oil prices. Libya is part of that. Libya coming online, looking like it's going to resume production at a higher level. So that combination helping the yen stronger across the board. Key levels falling. Dollar yen 131.50 was a massive level. And the RBA overnight surprised with rather dovish guidance, or maybe a little bit more appropriately, very similar to the Fed. It is loosening up its guidance. It does not want to provide guidance. And that seems to be a trend here. But regardless, the various adjustments to the statement and the loosening up of that guidance to incoming data, just like the Fed did, saw the Australian dollar weakening. It had been sitting atop a pretty solid recent rally. So Aussie pairs in general rolling over. This surprised me because I thought they had a good chance to go 75 basis points together with a few other people out there. And they did not. And in fact, with the dovish interpretation of that guidance, the Aussie was quite weak overnight. And then on slide six, so you can see Aussie, and you can see that just the scale of the downside momentum. What a big move that is. If we see further recession fears, we see some big new drops in commodity prices, this could continue lower and rapidly so. And on the trend readings, the Japanese yen getting pretty hot there, getting towards a 5 reading on the trend. That's a very high level. The Chinese renminbi is the weakest currency relative to the rest of the G10 currencies. And that's quite interesting, as we have noted, this interesting angle on the Chinese property sector. Dollar picking up, however, yesterday, despite that dollar yen drop. If you look broadly, dollar pulling back a little bit this morning. Euro dollar is trying to new highs. That got rejected. Cable was pushed back lower. And of course, Aussie dollar as well. So I think we're going into some risk off. I have a hard time selling the dollar in a risk off situation. And then finally, by the way, gold touching that near that 1780 level, which is really key chart point, arguably the zone up into 1800 as well, but 1780 was a massive level on the way down. That is also very much linked to the situation in yield. So if yields continue to drop, I think the gold price would be supported. But watch that technical chart area, 1780 to 1800 on the gold chart. All right, Peter, let's get back to the equity market, which is what most people are trading, and the stocks you have in your radar for today.
Yeah, so we have had a couple of interesting earnings releases here in Europe. We have Maersk, the world's largest container shipping company. They are raising their underlying profit, so EBIT, to $31 billion for the fiscal year, closing in end of December from previously $24 billion. So still a very lucrative business to be in, for sure. There's still a lot of bottlenecks around the world, keeping prices high. British Petroleum, one of the largest energy companies in the world, have put in their five-year price chart there on slide seven. Look at the earnings speed there. I mean, they just raking in so much money that they are boosting dividends by 10%. They're increasing their share buyback program by $3.5 billion. They have had an exceptional oil trading, as they say in their press release in the Q2, and they have extremely strong refining margins right now. I think it was something Steen as well alluded to in our internal call this morning. I mean, and I called energy companies a couple of months back, the cheapest they have been in 27 years on a relative basis and almost also on an absolute basis. And I think if you look at the chart of BP and you look at the outlook for the business, at least in the next couple of years, we all know that, you know, there are a lot of efforts to not kill, but at least, you know, reduce the oil industry. It is still very much and a very, very important industry for our daily living, our current living standards. I still think there's a trade to be made here, but it's the whole ESG framework is holding back flows, at least from a large part of the institutional side. And then
we have a small question on BP.
Yeah.
So you have the chart there, which is the London listing, and that's in pence per share. So that's £4. What is that? Around £4 per share or 400 pence. I guess they report earnings though, commonly
in dollars.
Dollars per share. So it's a bit confusing to translate from the dollars per share in terms of the earning to the chart, just for an idea on approximate yield of that earnings yield on that equity, just a little injection.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but the current run, the current 12-month run rate is just slightly below $2. Let's put it the earnings at $1.50 per share, and it is trading at £4 per share. So if you think, if you know where the cable cross is, you know, the PE ratio is just ridiculous for BP,
right.
The current rate. If we look at Pinterest, I think that was an interesting one. They reported after the close yesterday, shares were up 21%. They beat on monthly active users. That was a big concern for investors that they were losing engagement, but that was not the case. And They also hit the estimates on revenue. They lost a little bit against sentiment on EBITDA, so the operating profit before depreciation and amortization. But then the big news that came out was that Elliott Management, which is one of the most famous, I think, activist investors of all time, came out and announced that they are now the biggest shareholder and they are fully behind the new CEO to turn this business around. And Elliott, of course, they don't have a flawless track record, but they do have a pretty strong track record in getting companies to, or at least force companies to squeeze out value. So this is an interesting one to watch in the U.S. session.
All right. And then we have a very busy earnings calendar. We're through the bulk of the earnings season, but I see some pretty prominent names there. You talked a little bit about them yesterday, but what's your big focus? Any names you want to pull out from today's list here on slide 8?
Yeah, quickly, Airbnb and Marriott, of course. Both are interesting from different perspectives on traveling and consumer demand for leisure activities. Starbucks, another consumer brand, but from a different angle. So obviously watching that. And then PayPal, given the big impact that have been on the payments industry, that one will gather some attention. And then, of course, a big focus today for us is, of course, Caterpillar. So Caterpillar is just an enormous business. The biggest one in mining and global construction from the construction equipment side of things. And because they sell equipment, Caterpillar is much more forward looking, because if demand is very strong, there's an increase in orders for construction equipment. So and they're always very candid on their views on China, which is, I think, 20% of their total business. So we typically get some pretty good clues on the economy. And as you can see, I think the retreat you have seen in Caterpillar share price over the past year, I think, rhymes pretty well with the slowdown in Chicago Fed National Activity Index and the general slowdown we're seeing in China and elsewhere. So we'll be watching that and commenting on it, of course.
Yeah, but I wonder what Caterpillar's exposure is to China more broadly, China being a consumer of such a vast percentage of global commodities. And you mentioned construction equipment. I assume they're also very busy in excavation equipment, yeah, and mining related activities, and a lot of that mining production ending up in China as well. So yeah, that is a very interesting report, and it'd be interesting to see their especially their guidance, I assume, for future quarters here. All right, let's look at the economic calendar for the rest of today. We have an interesting opportunity if these Fed speakers today want to take it to express any disapproval, if there is any, to how the market reacted to the FOMC meeting last week. So we have Evans, he's a non-voter, but he's of the Chicago Fed, out today. And then Mester and Bullard are also out speaking. They are both voters. Look for those speeches today. Bullard is the most notorious of the more hawkish-leaning portion of the FOMC. And tonight we have the New Zealand Q2 employment and average hourly earnings data. Quite interesting there. New Zealand was one of the first and more aggressive to hike, and it's also rolling over a bit more aggressively than elsewhere in some of its data, as well affected by energy import impacts, et cetera. So an interesting data point there. And then we have a retail sales for the Q2 out of Australia. Rest of the week, though, quite interesting with the ISM services tomorrow. I really want to see what that one is looking like. It is a key indicator for whether that portion of the economy, the dominant portion of the U.S. economy, continues to tick along here, or whether it's losing momentum. And Bank of England Thursday, 50 basis points expected, and the jobs report from the U.S. on Friday. Most of all, though, top of the list is the situation in Taiwan, the Chinese response to that, and then any, of course, U.S. counter response. Keep that on your radar. This market looks very complacent at these levels relative to the set of risks going forward here. We may have just seen a tipping point yesterday, a little bit too early to call that, but we'll be watching for it in coming days. For now, that's it. And we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.